Support for this podcast comes from Is Business Broken, a podcast from Questrom School of Business. Stick around until the end of this podcast for a preview of the first episode, a conversation with Dean Susan Fournier, where she answers the question at the heart of the show.
From WBUR Boston and NPR, I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. This is On Point.
Sometimes, y'all, it's so hard when we lose our direction. We get lost in our fears. It's too dark in a world full of tension. Oh, yeah.
The OJs are ready to start stopping. That's the title of the track you just heard off their latest and final album, The Last Word. The OJs have had a remarkable 60-year career with 10 gold and 9 platinum albums. They were inducted into the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame, and all along the way, they've been making music with a message, from hits like Love Train to their latest single Above the Law, which tackles corrupt politicians and racial and class inequality. This hour on Point, we'll hear The Last Word with the OJs. And you can join us. What do you hear in the OJs' music, from Love Train to Above the Law? What message do you want in music in 2019? And what is your question for this legendary group? What's your question for the OJs? We're at 1-800-423-8255. That's 800-423-TALK. You can also join us anytime at onpointradio.org or Twitter and Facebook at onpointradio. And joining us today from New York are Eddie Levert and Walter Williams Sr. They are founding members of the OJs, which was formed in 1958. The Last Word, their first studio album in 15 years, was released on last Friday. So Eddie Levert, welcome to On Point.
Hello. How are you?
I'm doing well. It's wonderful to have you. And Walter Williams Sr., it's great to have you with us as well. Welcome to you.
Hello. It's good to be here. Thank you.
So first of all, tell us a little bit about the track we just opened with Start Stoppin'. What is this song all about?
It's really about faith and, something like, how your heartfelt stuff is, and that stuff that you can't see, religion and holding on to that faith and believing in something that's intangible, something that you can't see, something that you believe is good and everybody should experience it.
Yeah.
It is a positive message. And it just has great hopes and ambitions and nothing negative. Mm-hmm. So should be easy to digest.
Yeah. So it's been 15 years since you've had a studio record, right? What brought you back into the studio for this album?
Really, it was our manager, Toby Ludwig, Steve Greenberg, they all had a vision. We had the same vision also, to the point that, before you leave out of the game, you want to see if you can make that impact one more time, if you can still sell to the marketplace that now exists. And so getting together, and finally making it happen was like a dream of mine, because I felt like we needed to do just one more record.
Yeah. And it wasn't our first experiencing someone offering a deal. It just wasn't, before this deal, it wasn't the right deal. And just so happens that when we sat down with these people, it was the way we want it to go, and all of the positive things that should be in your deal if it's your last deal.
And are you talking about positive in terms of musically or business-wise? What made this the right one?
A positive business-wise, mm-hmm. and positive as far as what we wanted to say and the songs we wanted to sing.
Yeah. Well, on that point, let's hear a little bit more from the album. This is a track called Above the Law, and again, it is from the OJ's latest album called The Last Word. So let's listen. So now you say the sound of the gavel tells quite another sequel. Black boy on drugs, imprisonment, and a heavy fine. White boy on drugs, prehab and treatment to restore mind. We've been slavery, race to war, poverty, separate from Italy. That's Above the Law from the OJ's latest album called The Last Word. Eddie Levert and Walter Williams Sr., so much going on in just that one verse of the song. Racial inequality, income inequality. You take a shot at Wall Street there. Talk about incarceration. It's a song very heavy with a lot of messages, Eddie.
And we wanted to just... to address the disparities that we see in the way, let's say, people of color is treated rather than people who are non-colored. Mm-hmm. You know, there's different rules for different people. It all depends on what color and what shade they are. We just wanted to point that out. Well, we wanted to also point out that, you know, some of these politicians, you know, they think that they can change the rules as they go. They can change the law as they go. So we wanted to know, how much money does it take for you to think that you can live above the law?
Hmm. And Walter, what do you think?
Well, laws have been written to help make things equal, to make it an equal playing field, and it still isn't. And, you know, to point these things out with a groovy track helps people dance and listen to the message. Because everyone don't feel the same way about negativity. A lot of people want change because it makes it a better place to coexist with everybody. And we're finding that out more and more and more as we live. Hmm. We saw as many white people march with black people to make it an equal playing field. But yet, there are politicians who are in charge, and they make it the way they want to make it. Mm-hmm. And that's not right, and it shouldn't be accepted. Mm-hmm. We should still talk about it.
Yeah. So bringing these messages to people listening to your music has always been part of what you do, hasn't it, for more than 50, almost 60 years?
Yes, yeah. Absolutely, Meg.
Yes.
Absolutely. We you know, it's not that we're trying to beat anybody up, or not that we're trying to, you know, like march with signs and stand up and demonstrate and all of that stuff. It's just that we feel like sometimes the people go to sleep and they don't realize the message. And we feel like sometimes we have to just wake them up, grab them, shake them by the collar and say, this is what's really going on and you should be aware. Let us just tell you about it. Not saying that we are the wherewithal or the know-it-all or we can change things, but you should be aware of what's going on around you.
Yeah. Walter, what do you want to pick up on that thought?
well, the truth should never hurt. Mm-hmm. And these things are obviously truthful things. I mean, we see them happening every day. And if no one speaks on it, then it doesn't raise the consciousness about it. Truth is gospel. So shouldn't be any fits or anger about that. It should be accepted.
Yeah.
It's just hard for, you know, you have some people who just, they will never change. They will always feel a certain kind of way. You can make them aware, and the more you make them aware, the more hostile they become. You know, and there's certain people in this world, black, white, yellow, whatever, that feel like things should go a certain way, and when it don't go their way, they turn hostile, and then they try to make something happen. That is not going to work. You know, like we've also preached throughout our records, you must have love. Mm-hmm. You must come together as people. That's the only way we can make it a better world. Because with all the songs that we make about what's going on in the system, nothing has changed.
Yeah.
Since 1972, we've been singing the same message, and nothing has changed.
Well, Eddie Levert and Walter Williams Sr., founding members of the OJs, their latest album out just this month is called The Last Word, and we're going to take a quick break here. We want to hear from you. What is your question for these legendary R&B singers? And do you want to know why they're saying this may be their last album after such a long career? We're at 1-800-423-8255. That's 800-423-TALK. We'll head into the break with Pressure. Again, off The Last Word from the OJs. This is On Point.
Love my shoulder, relieve the pressure.
Support for this podcast comes from Is Business Broken?, a podcast from Questrom School of Business. These days, it's hard to ignore the debate over the role business should play in society.
There's crescendo around profit, period. Is profit bad? Is capitalism evil? These themes are out there.
Is this criticism of business warranted? And if so, how do we fix it? Stick around until the end of this podcast for a preview of the first episode of the Is Business Broken podcast.
I remember old pictures of the past. All these dark faces, oh man, didn't we have a blast?
This is On Point. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty, and that is 68 Summer Nights, a track off The Last Word. It is the latest album from the OJs, and founders Eddie Levert and Walter Williams Sr. join us this hour to talk about this album, to talk about their long and legendary careers, and also to talk about this great thing, the Philadelphia sound. And we want to know what your questions are for the OJs, for Eddie Levert and Walter Williams Sr. We're at 1-800-423-8255. That's 800-423-TALK. And Eddie and Walter, a little bit of nostalgia there in that track, 68 Summer Nights?
Yeah,
I think so. Reminiscing.
It goes back, yeah. It's back when summer nights were summer nights. You remember that, Meghna? When summer nights were summer nights. When you could lay in the grass and didn't have to worry about what you might get up and have once you got up.
The past always looks a bit rosy, doesn't it?
Because you got away with it.
Yeah. You live to tell the tale, exactly. Let's go to the callers. We've got lots of callers, lots of your fans who want to talk to you. So Harry is calling from Cornish, New Hampshire. Harry, you're on the air.
Hi, thanks so much for taking my call. I'm a huge fan of Eddie and Walters. I love the OJs.
Thank you.
The message of love is I hear that loud and clear. I remember back in the day when I worked as a room service waiter at the Warwick Hotel in Philadelphia.
Wow.
And I lived there for 13 years. But I remember you guys would come into the bar on occasion, or you would stay there. And I remember you had a manager who was a short guy with a beard. I don't remember his name, but I remember you guys were just so nice. And this is back in the day when we had the Philadelphia Mafia, and it was pretty unruly in that place at times. But you guys always struck me as the coolest guys in the room. So I want to thank you, and what an honor it is to talk to you both.
Thank you so much.
My pleasure. The Warwick, it's still there. I don't get a chance to go in there much anymore because we're just in and out most of the time. But got great memories of that place.
Yeah, do you have the unruly memories of the Philly Mafia too?
No, fortunately, we didn't experience that.
But you know what? I mean, we should talk about Philadelphia, obviously, and the Philadelphia sound. So first of all, I mean, for folks who aren't familiar with it, how would you describe what the Philly sound is?
Really, really, really good music.
Mm-hmm.
Rhythm married with great orchestration.
Yeah.
Great vocals. We probably had the best engineer in the world, Joe Tarsia, in those days, and a great studio. So they created a lot of things while we were right there in the studio to enhance what we were doing. And the Philly sound, I would say, again, is great rhythm musicians and then great orchestration put on top of it.
And do you-
I think it was also, you know, there was a lot of spiritual overtones in that, a lot of gospel, a lot of church in what they were doing, which was just a little slight different than Motown. Motown was more pop-orientated. Philly was more like gospel-orientated with the good rhythm, the strings, and they refined it. It's like Charlie Atkins, who used to do our choreography. He says it was like putting chitlins under glass.
Do you think the new album authentically captures that Philly sound?
I think what it brings is the vocals and the vocal ability and that gospel overtone that Eddie and I will always have, because that is our background. That is where we come from. Mm-hmm. And wherever we go, we take it with us.
Yeah. Well, you know what?
I think in the interim, the Philly sound and the message, you know, because everybody was able to take some of those songs and make them a part of them. So that to me was the strength of those songs, the words, the melody, and the delivery.
Yeah. Well, you know what? Let's listen back to a song from 1972, number one record. It's Love Train, and yes, it's a song about love, but the OJs also say this song has a message too. So here's Love Train. That's Love Train from the OJs, 1972. Eddie and Walter, this is one of those songs that it takes only a couple of notes and you know exactly where you are. So what is that? I mean, it has that lush orchestral feel that you're talking about with the Philly sound. And also a little more poppy to my ears. But what is the message in Love Train, even after all these years?
The message is love.
Yeah.
Throughout the Bible, it speaks of love. This particular song not only speaks of love in the U.S., but it goes over to Germany and Russia and China and England. And it just says to the world, we have to coexist. Everybody get on the love train and let's work it out. Let's get to know each other. Let's love each other. And it'll make for a better place to live.
I when I hear Love Train, I think about the Coors. The Coors, they used that song as the train that was coming through the winter, and they used that to advertise with it. But the me and Walter, we have a scholarship thing that we do, and we, while they were running that commercial, we went to them and we asked them, we say, well, and this is just to show you the disparity that they have in advertisement and all of that other stuff. We went to them and we said, well, you're using our song Love Train, and we're trying to get scholarships for these kids. Mm. We would love to get a train to go from city to city or pick up people from for just a regional train or whatever. And we would love for you to be a part of our vision and to help us get the scholarship for these kids. And they told us, well, you know, that is not the demographic. Your demographics are not the demographics that we're trying to reach. So who are you trying to reach when you play a song like Love Train? The demographic should be anybody who believes in love, mm-hmm. you know. And so I just feel like Love Train is a song that when we do it, everybody jumps up and they dance all the way around the arena and they have a great time. And it's not about demographics at that point.
Yeah.
It's about people of all colors at that point. So I don't know what they meant by demographics.
Huh. Well, we have a lot of still many more callers who want to tell you how much they love your music. So Mike is calling from Broadbrook, Connecticut. Mike, you're on the air with Eddie Levert and Walter Williams Sr.
Hey, Mike.
Hi, guys. I'm a trumpet player, singer, and I've been playing your songs for a long, long time. I'm 58 years old. And my son, who's now 28 years old and a musician as well, he grew up listening to the OJs and the Temptations and Tower of Power and Earth, Wind & Fire and all that stuff that I always enjoyed playing in the back seat. And when he was about 6 or 7 years old, we were riding down the street coming from the supermarket or something, and an OJ song came on, and he started singing along with it. And I turn around and I look at him. I said, how do you know that? And my son, he's just this little kid. He's like 6 or 7 years old. He goes, Daddy, that's the OJs. You don't mess with the OJs. It just sounded funny coming from a little kid, you know. How did he even know that? But anyway, guys, the message is the thing, and it's something I always taught my son. And he is a musician now, like I say, as well. He tours with a band and writes his own music, and very socially conscious. And, you know, just the influence you had on people like myself, I think is going to carry on through the generations. And I think it's good. And the only question I have is, are you guys going to tour this album, and are you looking for a trumpet player?
We're going to tour this album. Walt, you answer that other question.
Thanks, Eddie. Mike, that's a really, really, really good story. Where are you located?
I'm in
Broadbrook, Connecticut. It's one of the five boroughs.
Connecticut,
of Windsor.
Okay, yeah. We play a couple of casinos in Connecticut, at least once or twice a year, and we always augment horns with our rhythm section. So it's a possibility if, in fact, you are registered with the union. We always try to get readers, get union players. When we come to that area, make yourself available. Make yourself known.
Mike, I think the door is being cracked open here for you. So best of luck to you, Mike. Eddie LaVert and Walter Williams. I want to get back to some of the music from the 70s, because there's a particular track that I really want to ask you about. It's Ship Ahoy, and this is from 1973. The title, this is going to be the title track off that similarly named album. It's the title track is 9 minutes long, but we're just going to hear a snippet of it. So here it is, Ship Ahoy.
Tote that box, I gotta lift that bell. Get a little drunk, drunk, gonna land in jail. Somebody crack the whip. I'm your master, and you're my slave.
That's Ship Ahoy from the OJs from 1973. Eddie LaVert, Walter Williams Sr., this is one of those songs that can be taken, should be taken as, you know, a great social justice anthem. I mean, can you tell us about how you recorded and wrote Ship Ahoy?
I didn't write it. Yeah. We didn't write it, but Gamble and Huff did.
Mm-hmm.
And at that time, back in the 70s, we felt like that we needed to make the younger kids aware of their history and where we came from and what we came through to get to where we are at that time. But you know... It wasn't to create any kind of dissension or anger, just trying to make people aware of who they are and where we came from and what we need to get past. And see, because I feel like those kind of songs, those kind of movies, does nothing, but it's like a sore. If you keep scratching it, it's going to bleed again.
Yeah.
So we shouldn't scratch that sore, but we should learn from it and try to do better.
Right.
You know, whenever I see the remake of movies and you know, these slave movies and all of that, it's almost like rubbing a sore and now it's bleeding again. I don't think that we need to rub the sore. I think we need to try to put some salve on it and try to heal the sore.
Mm.
I think the great point that you made is our younger people need to know who they are, where they came from, and a re-release of that, or actually putting it in the show as we did last year, I think raises the consciousness of those that know about it, knew about it, participated in it, and... The big lesson is to educate our young people as to who they are. I think that was the best point made.
And it also served as a lesson for whites also, non-colored people. I just keep saying white and color and all that stuff. And people of lighter color, it makes them aware of what their history too, because their history is in there too, you know, and it should rub them wrong, and they should feel some kind of way about it too, because it's something that was done, and not trying to make an issue out of it, but just trying to say, look, we don't need to go back there. We need to keep moving forward. We need the message now has stopped being that. It's love.
Yeah. Well, Eddie LaVert and Walter Williams Sr., hang on for just a moment because it is time for us to take another quick break. We're talking with the founding members of the celebrated R&B group, the OJs. They say that they've released what could be their last album. It came out this month. It's called The Last Word. So let's go into the break here quickly with The Rich Get Richer. This is, however, from 1975 from their album Survival. We want to hear from you and your questions for the OJs. We're at 1-800-423-8255. That's 800-423-TALK. This is On Point. We'll be right back.
Support for the On Point podcast comes from Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform that lets you find candidates fast. Ditch the busy work and use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. And listeners get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/on point. That's Indeed.com/on point. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Turn off the TV to avoid the news. Look up to heaven cause I'm so confused. Another child lost to the city. No place to hide, even the finest schools.
I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. This is On Point, and you're listening to Stand Up, Show Love. It's a track off The Last Word. The Last Word is apparently the last album by the OJs. They just released it this month. The legendary R&B group, which is first formed in 1958. They have 10 gold, 9 platinum albums, inducted into the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame, and Eddie Levert and Walter Williams Sr. are joining us this hour today to talk about the new album and their long careers. We're at 1-800-423-8255. That's 800-423-TALK. Let's go back to the phones. Judy is calling from Jupiter, Florida. Judy, you're on the air.
Hi there. I just had a question about a song that I love. It's called The Backstabbers. And
yes.
I was just wondering, did that song come from a personal experience or... you know, did someone do you wrong, or how did that come about?
Look, I don't know how you can live in this world and never have a backstabber. So, yes, I'd have to say it's from experience, but really that song, we just, another one of those songs that the message was there, that we felt like people need to be aware that there were those kind of people out there.
We didn't write it. It was written by McFadden and Whitehead, but it was the perfect song for us because those are the kind of messages we like to convey, to give to the public, to see if they've experienced anything like that or to make them aware. And again, to a groovy beat, and there's a big fat message in it.
The message is what? Beware?
Yeah. Right, Magna.
Beware of those backstabbers,
Magna. Beware
of
them. What they do.
And smile in your face.
Well, you know, I want to hear another track off the new album, The Last Word, because I think there may be a nod here to another really great pair of musicians and producers from Philadelphia. So we'll talk about that in a second. But this is I Got You off The Last Word.
Love is a revolution. It twists and it turns. It burns, but it heals. But it still just returns. Joy
I Got You from The Last Word, the latest album from the OJs. And Eddie LaVert and Walter Williams Sr., in the instrumentation there, are you giving a nod to, I mean, I just want to say Gamble and Huff, or at least some of the other great producers?
Absolutely. I think in producing this record, I think they used the Philly sound as a gauge to get to the meat of what we do.
Mm. So tell us more about your experiences working with Kenneth Gamble and Leon Huff, right? Because they produced some of your biggest hits.
Well, our first when we first started with them, we had to kind of find our way. They started off with Eddie singing most of the lead, which he had done over the years, and until they heard some of the things that Eddie and I wrote together, which were double leads, then they kind of switched to that, and I think they liked that approach to the song, different concepts that worked together, the way Eddie sings, the way I sing, both coming from a gospel background, and it worked for them. I think our first effort to do that was the Backstabbers and the Love Train. I mm-hmm. think they were both on the same album, and we did some other things together, 992 Arguments and stuff like that. So that approach worked, and we stayed with that approach.
Yeah. Well, I want to go back in time once again. This is again to 1973, off the album Ship Ahoy, and this is the song For the Love of Money.
Some people got to have it.
That's For the Love of Money off the 1973 album Ship Ahoy from the OJs. And Eddie and Walter, the reason why I wanted to play this song is... you know where I'm going, right? I mean, it's kind of a revelation that the OJs, with your profound music that brings a lot of messages to people, became the theme song for The Apprentice. What do you think about that?
I think it was great.
Yeah.
You know, it was a great thing.
Yeah.
But see, I don't think I won't mention any names, but I don't think he really listened to the lyric of that song. I think all he heard was money, 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 money. But he didn't listen to all the things we were saying in that song.
It really speaks about the negative way
yeah.
of using money.
Yeah.
Yeah, and all of the bad that it can bring. It did. And of course, we know about the positive, you know, when it uplifts people and situations. But I think he missed that part of it.
I don't think he really listened to that.
Well, it definitely brought your music to a lot of people who hadn't
right.
heard it before.
Absolutely.
But maybe,
absolutely.
You know, they should check out the full track, as you're saying. Let's go back to the phones. Let's go to Walter, who's calling from Suitland, Maryland. Walter, you're on the air.
Hello, gentlemen. Namesake
hello,
and Mr.
Walter.
Eddie.
How are you doing?
I definitely want to, as a professional broadcaster now, I want to thank you all for all your positive music over the years. I wanted to add a little story to the Ship Ahoy song, how powerful it is. 1976, when I was in 11th grade, yes, class of 77, Suitland High, and I choreographed a dance to Ship Ahoy. And so to talk to you all years later, I can't express the words how I'm feeling. I just want to thank you for all your positive work. And when you come to the D.C., Baltimore area, I will definitely be in the crowd.
Thank you.
Thank you, sir.
Walter, thank you so much for your call. Let's go to Judith, who's calling from Buffalo, New York. Judith, you're on the air with the OJs.
Hello, Walt. Hello, Eddie. How are you?
How are you?
How are you?
I'm fine. It's just so wonderful to know you all because I have been your fan since the early 60s when you was coming to Delvo Ballroom in Buffalo, New York, when Eddie O.J. was your manager, I think.
In the Revelot Lounge?
Hello? No.
Hello?
The Delvo Ballroom when I was a teenager in high school. You all
was that a skating?
You guys then.
Okay.
Judith,
it's been a long time ago.
Yeah, and Judith, your phone line's a little tough to hear, so we're going to see if we can work on it a bit and come back to you if we can. But Eddie and Walter, we've got in hearing how connected your fans still are to you to this day. It made me actually wonder. I should ask you, back in your early career, who were your influences? What brought you to music? Who did you look to for inspiration when you first got started?
Oh, man.
Yeah.
Jackie Wilson, Sam Cooke, the Coasters. We were influenced by Flamingos, Lil Anthony and the Imperials. The list goes on.
Yeah.
All of these people were a great influence on us as far as coming up because Dick Clark played a great big fat part in our career, not in our career, but in our lives by Bandstand. Like Don Cornelius played a great part in putting us in front of a larger audience. The list goes on. The people that really influenced us and made us. It was a great list of people, you know, Nat Cole.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Come on, Walter, help me out.
Frankie Lyman, Teenagers, Drifters, Platters. All of these people were, when you would go see them, it was just like the stardom thing was overwhelming, and you wanted to be that. You wanted to do that. And to get into it and actually become a part of it and still get a chance early days to work with some of these people. We worked with Jackie Wilson. We worked with the Drifters and the Coasters. And they were fantastic with giving information.
Yes,
of how to hone your career and your craft. And
James Brown.
Yeah. It's,
right.
Sammy Davis Jr.
It's amazing
to say
the knowledge.
Yeah, to have met these people and to have them sit down and tell you what you need to do to last and to be in this business and have an impact.
Mm.
Am I right or wrong?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
They
let us know early in our careers, music, yeah, you got that part. Business.
Uh-huh.
Right.
Make sure you concentrate as much on that part
as
well.
Well, so can I ask you about the music business today? Because, I mean, we have mega selling, chart topping R&B and hip hop stars who are really defining American music in so many ways. But I saw a video on BuzzFeed of the two of you looking at watching some videos from chart topping songs from like Cardi B. And I'm not sure you like the direction that the music's going in.
Look, you can't take anything away from these artists because they are impacting the world. I think that's the difference in our era. You got streaming, you got Spotify, Pandora, you got all of these different entities that you have to get. It's not about selling records anymore. It's about getting people to stream your work and getting as many hits as you can, and that makes your price go up. So it's not about records anymore. It's about popularity.
Mm. So popularity, but the OJs have maintained a high level of performance and popularity despite whatever the trends are in music. So how did you guys do it?
Well, we had a choreographer that taught us early on in our careers that when people leave the performance, and especially if you've been on a show with three or four five other acts, you want them to leave talking about you.
Gotcha.
And he made a point of that. And in order to do that, you had to concentrate on giving the best show that you could possibly give every night out. Now, I don't know if we did that, but we certainly tried to do it. And I think our live performances have kept us in this business and in a good place.
Yeah.
I think Charlie said that one of the key things that it always goes through my head every time, even in rehearsal, he says you have to do it like you're going to do it in front of 1 million people. If you practice it that way, you would automatically do it that way when you're in front of people.
Mm. You still love making music and performing so much. I don't know. I'm not sure I believe you that this is your last studio album.
I don't think we have any control over that. I think that's in someone else's hands.
Yeah,
and that's how I would prefer it.
Yeah, yeah. You know, we're getting older. I'm 70. I'll be 77 coming up June 16th. And the closer I get to 80, all I can visualize is me walking out on stage in a walker
on a scooter.
That's not a good look.
I tell everyone that I won't be in that group they called the old Jays. I'm going to try to avoid that one. But you're right. We do still love it. And it's been great to us and the ones that we love. So it's in God's hands, really.
Really.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, we're grateful that you did go into the studio this one last time to make and record The Last Word. So Eddie Levert and Walter Williams Sr., founding members of the OJs, got to say it again, 10 gold, 9 platinum albums, inducted into the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame, and The Last Word was released just this month. They both joined us from New York. Mr. Levert and Mr. Williams, it's been a great pleasure to have you. Thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you so much for having us. Thank you.
Thank you.
And we will wrap up this hour with a track from The Last Word. It's I'll Be Sweeter Tomorrow Than I Was Today. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. This is On Point.
Support for this podcast comes from Is Business Broken, a podcast from Questrom School of Business. Listen on for a preview of one of the episodes featuring Susan Fournier, Alan Questrom Professor, and Dean.
So let's start this conversation with the title of the show, Is Business Broken? It's a provocative title and a question. Where did this come from? Why that question now?
We're in a big cultural moment where capitalism, business, market systems are really being scrutinized and debated, and the role of business with it. So I think the question is just on the table. It's on people's minds. It's in the news media. It's in conversations. I think there are growing voices, loud voices, especially among young people who seem increasingly to believe that business and maybe capitalism with it are harmful and create rather than solve problems for society. And what we do seem to hear are those loud voices And they are very black and white. There are protagonists and the antagonists and the pros and the cons. And there's really no middle discussion. It's sort of like people for and against, and it's loud.
Right. For and against DEI, for instance, right? A battle at play.
Right.
The way you describe it and the way you describe the polarization, it makes it feel like very much of the digital age, right? It feels very much of today. Some of those arguments have been around, though, right? Is this criticism of business and this question, is business broken, is that a new question?
You are so right. It is not a new question. Schumpeter, he was a professor at Harvard, and he's also maybe one of the most influential political economists of the early 20th century. He called for the death of capitalism, the death of business, 100 years ago.
Okay. Wow.
And when he critiqued way back then, he said the very successes of capitalism would bring about its downfall because it would create values hostile to capitalism, and that this would particularly take hold among intellectuals who were critiquing. So there's a lot of that same kind of dynamic happening today, and that's 100 years old. But yeah, we've seen this kind of cultural fervor playbook many times in the past, often precipitated by big crises.
Find the full episode by searching for Is Business Broken wherever you listen to podcasts, and learn more about the Mehrotra Institute for Business, Markets, and Society at ibms.bu.edu.